You're listening to The Rick Smith Show on the Progressive Voices Network.
With chaos in Washington, worsening climate disasters, more wars than we can count, and a wobbling economy here at home, the last thing we need is another big challenge. But look out, here comes a doozy. It's AI, artificial intelligence, the fast-evolving science of autonomous machines that can think, learn, and even reproduce themselves. Consider self-driving vehicles. Once the stuff of science fiction, the future is suddenly upon us, with Google, Daimler, and GM rolling out driverless taxis, commercial trucks, and even cars with no steering wheel or gas and brake pedals. An army of corporate lobbyists is rushing to legislative halls, literally changing the rules of the road to allow full deployment of these vehicles. What about the hundreds of thousands of professional drivers who will lose their jobs? Not our problem, say the financiers and AI barons who will profit from a mass botmobile conversion. Besides, as one AI champion coldly asserts, those drivers get sick, take vacations, etc. People are messy, he notes. Machines are straightforward. Indeed, so straightforward that these two-ton, non-sentient drivers will be driving straight at a world of defenseless pedestrians. Already, one of Uber's experimental cars killed an Arizona pedestrian last year. We can fix that, says Andrew Ng, a prominent AI investor. They just have to be reprogrammed. By they, Ng doesn't mean the self-driving machines. He means we pedestrians must be reprogrammed. Please be lawful, he scolds, and please be considerate of the computer-driven vehicles. No jaywalking. Obey pedestrian signs. Give right-of-way to the new technology. This is Jim Hightower saying, so don't just prepare yourself for a brave new world of automation. Prepare to be re-educated so you can interact properly with machines and don't get in their way.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
What the hell we fighting for? Just surrender and it won't hurt at all. Just got time to say your prayers while you're waiting for the hammer.
Well, it looks like Iowa Representative Steve King, I guess he stepped a little too deep into it this time around. As they have stripped him of all of his committee positions. Sorry, Steve. I guess you're just going to be showing up to work. And it's one of these things where you go, it's kind of about damn time. Just kind of a thought. You know, it's about time that a guy who has had so many moments, and I think one of my favorite, was the Cantaloupe Calves comment. He said, you know, that, you know, for every when they were arguing the DACA thing, he said for every valedictorian, there's another 100 out there who weigh like 130 pounds, who have calves the size of cantaloupes because they're carrying 75 pounds of marijuana across the desert. And you go, really? You know, these folks could barely carry themselves. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on that. Also, the shutdown. Anyway, hey. Donald Trump can relate. I've asked our good friend, Propane Jane, to come talk with us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So white nationalist, white supremacist, whatever, Steve King, looks like he's getting slapped on the hand.
Yeah, like you said, it's about time.
Do you have a favorite King comment?
No. Not at all. But you know what, though? You know, as vile as it sounds, I appreciate his honesty and his lack of filter, because I think he is actually saying what so many of the members of the Republican Party, elected officials all the way down to just the base of the party voters, who actually feel this way and believe it wholeheartedly. And I think that, you know, even though he's a stain on the whole Congress, I think he also is very representative of the dirty little secret that the Republican Party wants to act like it hasn't you know, had for the last 50 years.
Yeah, I think of my buddy Munch from, you know, a guy I worked, I haven't seen him in a number of years. We worked together for years. He grew up in Georgia, you know, back, you know, 20, you know, he's like 20 years older than me. So it had been like the late 50s, early 60s. And, you know, he told me at the time he would prefer people to, you know, walk up to him and call him the N-word. As opposed to smile at him. And he said, you know, and he said, look, all these guys who smile at me now, you know, think about the stuff that they say about my back. And I said, really, you'd rather have that than, you know, at least people being somewhat nice to you. And he's like, yeah, I want to know who you are.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, MLK said the same thing when he was traveling through the North. He said, hey, you know, back home, people are honest about it. Up here, they're hiding it. They're smiling in your face, and then behind your back, they're doing worse, actually. And I think that has become just a facet of our politics to the degree that it's so insidious that nobody even notices that it's happening. And then which makes somebody like Steve King, you know, really shock your consciousness because he's saying all of this out loud. But ultimately, this is the sentiment that drives Republican voters to the polls. This is what makes them go out and vote for somebody who says they're going to build a wall because Mexicans are rapists. That cantaloupe statement, I mean, these are the same ideas that Donald Trump himself espouses from the presidential podium at his rallies every time he does them. So I don't think that Steve King is by any means alone in that sentiment. He's the only one that's willing to say it out loud, and, you know, I'm glad that he's facing consequences for it. But this is happening because the Democrats are in power. He's been there, like, how long at this point? And he's been saying all of this racist stuff for the last 2 years while the Republicans were in control, and they did absolutely nothing about him.
Oh, no, he's been saying this stuff for at least
a decade. Exactly. I mean, this is who this man is, and they continue to put money into his campaign. They continue to help him get elected. They don't care. They feel like, hey, this is what the voters of Iowa want in that district, and he keeps going back. And so, I mean...
Yeah, it's crazy. I think one of the craziest
representative democracy.
Yeah, I think one of the craziest things that I ever saw him do is evidently he went on a trip sponsored by this Holocaust Memorial Group, and he met with a group of Nazis. And you know, you go, wait a second, how do you do that? How do you take the money of someone who's you know talking about the horrors of the Holocaust and then meet with the Nazis?
Because they don't care. He has an R after his name.
Yeah, it's crazy. just crazy. But I just thought I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
If you thought it was enough. Is it enough that they strip him of any committee appointments? I mean, now he's just going to sit around and make more racist comments.
Exactly. I mean, he's a nuisance. We won't be rid of him until the voters send him home.
Yeah, okay. Well, hopefully that, you know, every election I keep hoping that happens, and it never does.
Right.
What is it about Iowa? They're living up to the Iowa name. You know, I have a friend who's from Iowa. He says, idiots out walking around. That's how he remembers how to spell it. I'm going, okay, thanks for that. Wow. Anyway, day 24 of the shutdown. Thoughts?
Yes. It's a disaster. Trump is a disaster. Trump is instability in chief. Instability will abound as long as he is there.
Yeah. Texas want the wall?
No. Nobody wants this damn racist wall. But Trump.
Well, you know, there's a third of the population who does.
Well, but if he woke up tomorrow and said, I'm over it, Mexico's not paying for it, moving on to something else, that third would rally right behind him just as they were the day before.
Point well taken. the idiot base. I got it.
Yeah, I mean, they aren't fixated on the concept of the wall itself because it's completely idiotic. And it's futile, and it's not going to solve any problems.
So you're arguing that he could just dangle another bumper sticker slogan out in front of them, and they would magically forget about build the wall.
He could come out and wage another culture war against another group, and they would latch on to that just as they did the wall. That would be no problem for him. But for him, the bigger issue is he said he wanted something, and he wants it to be given to him. I mean, he is that toddler that's sitting on the floor that wants whatever toy or snack or whatever that his parents won't give, you know, him or her, and is just going flat out apeshit. This is what Trump is doing.
Yeah. Do you think it's simply that, or do you think it's I've had some people say it's even more in depth than just, you know, the tantrum. You know, he's really worried about Mueller, and this is a way of slowing down the investigation.
Oh, for sure.
This is a way of stopping the resources from investigating him. You know, we found out on Friday that the FBI began an investigation, you know, a couple months after he took office. You know, there's all of this stuff. And also, look, the Republican wet dream has always been destroy government. And this plays into it.
Yeah, it's a twofer. It's a twofer. And yes, I mean, Trump is, I think, simplistic enough to think on its face, you know, this is an investigation that's being run by government entities. So, of course, if the government's not funded, then they can't continue to do this work. I mean, yes, he possibly is thinking that. But at the end of the day, this is a man who is completely exasperated. And what do you do when you throw a tantrum? I mean, ultimately, you end up on the floor, arms and legs completely splayed out, completely vulnerable, just obstinate. You're just standing there going, I won't budge. I'm not standing up. I'm not rolling over. I'm just in this place. I'm static. And that's what he's doing. He's just sitting there static, not moving anything forward, not attempting to work with, you know, they're having these meetings or whatever, but ultimately he's just going in there with his own point of view. And if people don't agree with him, what does he do? He storms out of the room.
Yeah, slams his fist, says bye-bye. Because, you know, the little thing with Speaker Pelosi and Senator Schumer the next day after his little whatever that was.
Tantrum.
And again, I still love Anna Navarro's comment. I want my 9 minutes back. But, you know, he really thought that, you know, that speech was inspirational enough that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer would walk in and bow down and whatever you want, Sir Donald. And he, like you said, he had his tantrum when they said no.
This is a man who is accustomed for over 70 years of his life to throwing a fit and people bowing down to him and giving him what he wants and what he demands. This is what happens in his romantic relationships, if you can call them that. He forces, he takes what he wants. He tries, you know, he tries to impress upon that person that that's ultimately what they want, but he's really just bullying and manipulating people. And it's an abuser mentality. And so, you know, I think it was Time put out a story within the last week of, you know, this is a pattern that he's demonstrated in the business world where he makes deals by standing up and storming out of the room. I mean, that's a piece of his strategy because it is so aggressive and hostile, yep. And it's something that people typically just don't do.
No, you're right. And I have an acquaintance, a guy I've known for a number of years. I don't know if you remember the USFL. Trump owned a USFL team,
mm-hmm.
And he was one of the union's negotiators, this friend of mine. And he said, you know, we would sit for hours and have these meetings with the owners. And Trump would do just that. He would walk in and he would blow the whole thing up. And he said the great thing about having Trump do that is we ended up getting really great stuff out of the owners because they didn't want to deal with that anymore. He was such a disruptive force, mm-hmm. that the players actually got a lot more than the owners really wanted to give just because Trump would just booger everything up. And I guess it's highlighted by the fact that understand, he was a horrible businessman. I mean, what was the thing? Had he just put his money into something like an annuity or something? He would have made more money.
Right. But I mean, you can ask any psychologist, any psychiatrist, anyone who is a licensed clinical therapist that when you're running a group or a psychiatric unit and you have a really severely narcissistic or antisocial person in the group, that person changes the dynamic of the entire place, you know, and that person, when you get somebody like that on your unit, yes, you want to help them, but they become so toxic to the environment itself that after a couple of days, everybody's like, okay, we got to get this person out of here somehow. I mean, they even do that amongst clinical professionals. They have that effect on even clinical professionals who are trained to deal with this. That it just becomes exasperating on your end, perceiving it, and ultimately you just give up and you give in. And I think what he's hoping for in this situation, that the pain and suffering will become so immense after 24 or 30 or however many days. I mean, he said this could be months or years.
Right. And this is one of those moments where Mitch McConnell has to step in. But understand, exactly. McConnell wants as much destruction as anybody else. McConnell in all of this is, you know, the guy behind the curtain who, you know, has caused a lot of these problems. There are people saying, well, you need to blame McConnell. Well, no, McConnell's been doing this stuff for decades now. This is not new. This is Mitch McConnell's plan all along.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is what I was saying last week, in that ultimately, you know, Trump is always going to throw this tantrum. And, you know, when we're thinking about him as the president of the United States, we have to think about what means we have at our disposal to deal with that. Because it isn't a psychiatric unit, right? It's not a group therapy session. I mean, this is a government. And what the Constitution lays out is there are three co-equal branches of government. And the other two have to lean in and hold this one individual accountable for running roughshod over the whole process. And so you have Mitch McConnell there in control of the Senate. And, yes, he's been doing this for years. I mean, this is the reason why Merrick Garland isn't on the Supreme Court right now.
Right. So how do you, again, you know, I look at this and it's another one of these moments where, you know, we've been talking about this stuff from the beginning. I mean, go back to Inauguration Day, you know, we had these conversations that, you know, what we saw during the 2016 election was treasonous. What we saw was, you know, too much, you know, all this stuff with Russia.
Right.
Mitch McConnell and the Republicans have been doing this stuff for decades. None of this stuff is new. It's just now the suffering is being more widespread.
Yeah.
I mean, when do we wake up and take to the streets? When do we get out the pitchforks, Jen?
I mean, it feels like it's always been an opportune moment to do that, right? I mean, it's hard to say, you know, what has to actually happen to really, you know, tip that off in this society. But I think a lot of the problem is that there really isn't a muscle memory for it.
Yeah.
And certainly not for it to be going on like broadly across society rather than in these, you know, small pockets of marginalized groups like Black Lives Matter or the LGBTQ community or even the Women's March, even though women are, you know, greater than 50% of our population, those still, you know, sort of, I think, ended up being like niche movements. And so you do wonder, like, when are we going to see what we see happening overseas, you know, where there's just people all out in the streets from every demographic, basically because the society itself has broken down and people are alarmed by it. But I think we don't necessarily recognize it. It's kind of like that, you know, story they tell about the frog slowly being boiled in the pot, right? You know, you put him in there and the water's fine and he doesn't really notice that it's heating up gradually over time until it's too late and he's dead. And so I think that this is one of those instances where people just aren't awake yet, unfortunately. Even though I don't want to say that, I feel like we've been screaming at them to wake them up, but it hasn't gotten through.
And, you know, like I said, I've been saying this for years. I mean, you know, all the shutdowns during the Obama years, it was, you know, Boehner and it was McConnell. It was Republican led. And every time, you know, I kept saying, look, this is the goal. The goal is so that government doesn't reopen, so that they can privatize and profitize all of the operations of government. And, oh, by the way, you know, any of that oversight, any of that accountability out the window. Corporate America now runs the show, and we're at their behest. And the big moneyed interests, they control things. And all of this talk about Russia, you know, look, you're talking about the money, the oligarchs. You know, I had someone just recently tell me, well, you know, do you really believe that Trump and Putin sat down and hatched this plan? And I said, no, I don't think so. I think it's even worse than that. I think it's they've been doing business together for decades, and they're so intertwined, and their interests are so intertwined that they're not our interests.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, another piece of this puzzle is that the media itself has really engaged in, like, both-sidism so much and false equivalence so much. That it really is hard, I think, for the average person who isn't just, you know, culling through all of this information day by day by day, like those of us who are like politics junkies do. I think that a lot of that gets missed when the media does that. But this is a very interesting moment because as all the polls are continuing to show, public opinion has really solidified behind this is Donald Trump's fault.
Right.
And if it's not entirely his fault, it's also the Republican Party's fault.
Yep.
And yes, Democrats are getting some blame, but that 30% is obviously Republicans saying that. The majority of the country, the middle of the country, is rightfully pinning the blame on Trump and the Republican Party. And so I think even though it is a really tumultuous, scary time, I do think that people recognize what's going on and they see who's causing all of the problems because Trump is such a corrupt criminal figure in his own right. And his brand has been lumped on to the Republican Party in people's minds. I think that's a good thing.
No, I think so too. But you know, at the end of it, you know, Trump is the lightning rod. He's taking all of the attention. And we do. I think we forget that you've got all of these Republicans whom, because I always people give me a hard time. Well, you know, the Democrats aren't perfect, and I agree. The Democrats are nowhere near perfect. But the Republicans at this moment, if you're not talking, if you're not speaking out against this guy at this moment, you're just as bad as he is. You're just as treasonous. You're just as much of a criminal as he is, in my view.
Absolutely, and you look complicit. You look complicit in whatever ultimately comes out in the end because you didn't do anything to stop it, and actually you enabled it. So the longer that they continue to, you know, hide in the corners and, you know, leak these anonymous stories to the press of how worried they are and they really hope that Trump will finally come to his senses and help them out, they will not be spared at the voting booth. They just won't, because people will remember this terrible moment and their inaction.
Oh boy, I sure hope you're right, because you know I used to believe that. I used to believe that you know people will remember bad things. But you know, I got to think that they're putting, instead of fluoride in the water, we've got some kind of an amnesia that makes us forget. Because you know, I ask people about the shutdowns of the past, and they're those are Obama's shutdown. No, they weren't. Those are Boehner's shutdown. You remember during the Clinton years? Yeah, Clinton shut the government down. No, Gingrich did. And you go, how can you not remember that?
Yeah, but you know what I think is again, what is unique about this moment is that, yes, you have all of this shutdown, and I think definitely with the shutdowns during the Obama administration, a lot of it just kind of became a wash because ultimately the economy was roaring back from a recession. And obviously it was the Obama recovery that still is like we're still running on some of those fumes even right now. But
yeah.
The problem for Trump, I think, and the Republican Party is that not only are they doing the shutdown, they're doing it on the heels of their tax scam. And so as all of the economists are rightfully recognizing, we're in for some really significant trouble in terms of the economy.
Yeah. No, you're right.
The trade war, I mean, it's going to be disastrous for people. And so it's not just the memory, it's the fact that there is going to be actual pain and suffering that people attach to this moment and this presidency.
I hope you're right, because here's the thing. I know I make no more of these predictions, because after the collapse of 2008, I thought a Republican president and a Republican Congress would not be seen again in my lifetime. I thought the pain and the suffering and the people losing their homes and the people losing their jobs and all of the people who had 401ks that turned into 200.5s, I thought they would remember. And you're talking just 8 short years later. You've got, you know, the Republican trifecta winning the White House, the Senate, and the House, and also packing the courts even more. And I'm going, how is it possible you forgot 2008 already?
Well, I mean, I think what we're seeing in terms of the science, in particular, you know, as a physician, what I can tell you is that these socioeconomic indicators like drug abuse, death rates, in particular with the opioid epidemic, in particular in rural areas amongst the white working class, it's not just the economy that's taking them out, it's opioids.
Right.
And it's a president and a Republican Party who aren't doing anything from a policy standpoint to help these people.
Well, they're going to build the wall.
Well,
the wall's going to stop that, except the opioids come from China. But don't worry about that.
Well, and at the end of the day, the people who are dying, who are taking these accidental fentanyl overdoses, continue to be middle-aged, mostly white people. And these are the people who vote for Republicans. And so this is a new crisis. This is a compounded crisis that we haven't necessarily seen up until this point, particularly for those communities in America. We certainly saw the crack epidemic and all of that in the 80s and 90s in Black and Latino communities, but we are seeing something totally different with the white community, and it's completely being neglected and ignored by the Republican Party and Donald Trump that they sent to D.C. to do it to them.
So then could you make the argument that the Republican Party's not racist because they don't care about white people either? Just kind of throwing that out there. Because, look, when I was a kid growing up in the housing project in the 70s, I saw those guys coming back from Vietnam who had horrible heroin addiction problems. Mm-hmm. In fact, we found one guy in a big army green coat dead against the neighbor's house with a needle still in his arm. But, you know, back then they were just junkies. We didn't care about junkies. Now, as you're pointing out, these are middle-aged white suburban folk. You'd think we'd be, you know, moving mountains and, you know, changing the sea tides.
Right. But again, like you were talking about earlier, the oligarchy, the only color they care about is green.
Yep. See, I've said that my entire life.
Yeah.
I grew up mostly black. The other part was blue because I got beat up a lot. And, you know, I was just as poor as the black kid that lived next door to us. And the only thing that we were concerned about is we didn't have any green.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, again, it's the inability to understand that is why the Southern strategy works. It's why the culture war that the Republican Party wages all the time works. Because those individuals do see a difference between themselves and people who belong to other groups, whether it be, you know, their ethnicity, or their sexual orientation. They have learned to use that war to separate these people from their money, from their health care, from their, you know, just basic security in life. But they've done it in a way that has made it very unapparent to the people who are voting for it. And I think that they're going to wake up when it's way too late. And that moment is upon us. That's what the statistics show, unfortunately.
Well, it is most certainly crazy stuff. Let's finish up on what should we be doing? I mean, look, we can all be down. We can all, you know, be searching for the fentanyl. What do we do?
I hope not. I mean, what do? We have to, I think, continue to contact our representatives because they still have a job they're supposed to be doing. They still need to hear from the American people.
And they're getting paid.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're still getting paid our tax dollars to do nothing to help us. And so I do think we need to be vocal. I also think we do need to be in the streets. I do think protests should be organized. I do think we need to consider things like a national strike. We need to make ourselves aware of what tactics were used in the past. Sit-ins, how did the civil rights movement work? You know, what does social movements have to do to get attention and to get traction for the things they want? We all need to be knowledgeable about those things. We need to understand that the media may not always be telling us all of the story. We need to be vigilant about the information that we're receiving because we know that we're under threat of a cyber attack and fake news. And we need to know when we're dealing with people who aren't going to listen to our message so that we can spend our time on people who will and mobilize people who can come out and make our voice larger.
That's a good point. But the sad reality is most of us are on the treadmill just trying to pay the rent tomorrow. And to me, that's what this shutdown at the end of it, if it does end, if we ever do reopen our government, what should come out of this is just how precarious working people's positions are. And how the struggle is almost universal among the working class, where people can't go a week without a paycheck or 2 weeks without a paycheck without having real crisis. And I think that's really what's got to come out of that as well. But Jane, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. Always great talking to you. Thanks so much.
You too. Have a great week.
As always, our good friend Propane Jane. Love having her on. Always the same bit of voice. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back with our good friend Bob Nay, Talk Media News. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
U.S. Environmental Protection Agency accused Fiat Chrysler of installing secret software.
Fiat Chrysler to pay big fines for cheating on U.S. emissions tests. The three costliest weather disasters in the world last year all occurred in the United States. U.S. greenhouse gas emissions spiked in 2018. Plus,
politicians look the other way while big oil companies destroy this planet.
Democrats push ahead on climate action.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
The more carbon-based fuels you can introduce in the developing world, Africa, South America, Asia, the cleaner the environment gets.
Oh, man. Gotta hand it to Fox News. George Orwell must be proud. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, on Wednesday, Donald Trump promised to cut off FEMA wildfire relief money for the state of California after the worst and most deadly fire season on record out here, unless, he said, California gets their act together. Does he mean this? Is he actually going to cut off FEMA relief to California, where almost 100 people died last year in wildfires?
Well, it's not the first time that he's threatened to cut off FEMA funding for California, but it is unclear if this is official because, of course, FEMA officials did not comment because of the government shutdown.
Some 19,000 structures, that's homes, were burnt to the ground. And he's going to cut all of those families off, I guess.
Yep. It's the last thing that fire victims really needed to hear right now. Meanwhile, AP is reporting that automaker Fiat Chrysler has agreed to pay more than $650 million to the U.S. government to settle allegations that the company used illegal software to cheat on U.S. emissions tests, allowing more than 100,000 diesel vehicles to spew toxic pollution at 10 times beyond legal limits. The company will pay hundreds of millions in fines to the federal government and California state regulators and will reimburse vehicle owners, but did not admit any wrongdoing.
Huh. Secret software from Fiat Chrysler. Exactly, almost exactly what Volkswagen did. Go figure.
The three most costly natural disasters in the entire world in 2018 all occurred in the United States, and all were climate and weather related.
We're number one.
That's according to a new report by global reinsurer Munich Re. The costliest single disaster in 2018 was that camp fire in California that obliterated the town of Paradise, killing more than 80 people and causing overall damages of at least $16 billion.
Well, cut off their FEMA funds.
It was followed by Hurricane Michael in the Florida Panhandle and Hurricane Florence in North Carolina.
Any talk of cutting off FEMA funds to Florida and North Carolina?
Now that you mention it, no.
Weird.
Annual U.S. greenhouse gas emissions shot up in 2018 for the first time in nearly 10 years, increasing by nearly 4%. That's despite a near record number of U.S. coal plants closing last year. Researchers with the Rhodium Group said the spike was driven primarily by surging emissions from factories, planes, and trucks, and higher heating oil consumption. But they also said it probably would not have been as high without the Trump administration's deregulation efforts. The increase comes as scientists warn the world needs to be aggressively cutting emissions to avoid catastrophic climate change.
So once again, we're going in the wrong direction.
Exactly. But Democrats are pushing to make climate change a central political issue. Likely presidential candidate Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren called out the oil industry in announcing she's formed a presidential exploratory committee. Washington State's Democratic Governor Jay Inslee, who has not formally announced a 2020 run, over the weekend told MSNBC's Joy Reid that climate change is a threat to the economy and national security, and he believes the best hope for America is to nominate a Democratic governor.
To govern is to choose, and we must choose a path to economic growth that will simultaneously defeat climate change.
Well, good luck with that.
Finally, Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, in a 60 Minutes interview, refused to back down from the goals articulated in a Green New Deal jobs plan that some have described as radical.
I think that it only has ever been radicals that have changed this country. Abraham Lincoln made the radical decision to sign the Emancipation Proclamation. Franklin Delano Roosevelt made the radical decision to embark on establishing programs like Social Security. That is radical.
Do you call yourself a radical?
Yeah, you know, if that's what radical means, call me a radical.
She's radical. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Google Play. Find us, follow us, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
You can stand me up at the gates of
most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
I got news for you. And it's going down. Before you come home, tell me you're not angry. And I'll be leaving. And I'll be leaving.
Phrase of the day, big fat hoax. Love big fat hoax. Never heard that before. Lie, yes, never. Hoax. But there you go. That's Donald Trump's response to the New York Times story that, Russian agent. And look, do I think there was a bunch of stuff going on? Absolutely. I'm not really comfortable with the agent part yet. So we'll see as more of this unwinds. Still waiting for Mueller's report. And to me, that's going to be hopefully where we base our information on. What Mueller rolls out and the facts that come out of it. Anyway, let's find out what's going on around the world and in Washington, D.C. Bob Ney, Talk Media News. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So what do you think, Manchurian candidate? Was he born and bred to be president?
Are you saying that Putin's that dumb to make him the, are you saying that to make him the agent?
Yeah, well, you know, I've often said the guy's really an empty vessel. I mean, he's brilliant. He's brilliant at, ways, hey, look at me. He's brilliant at you know, that
branding.
Whole branding. Mm-hmm. But as, you know, as a policy person, as someone to keep a secret, as someone, he's the perfect destroyer.
You know, I have friends, and they, of course, called me this morning as I was in between radio stations, and they're like, oh, you see? And I said, stop. Hold on. Let's play Machiavelli for a second. Here's the thing. Do I think that at some point in time after Comey was fired, that this statement that you know, he was the Manchurian candidate, the old Frank Sinatra, Angela Lansbury movie, the plant in the White House to control the United States, do I think somebody said that potentially in the FBI? Yes.
Sure.
I think they could have. Yeah, absolutely. And do I think then they turned it over to Mueller? Yes, I do. Do I think that is going to come about? No, I don't. Because I'm skeptical of the FBI. Plus, now, if people get out front on this, and this becomes the story of the day, and he is the mole, he is the candidate, the Manchurian movie finally came true, and then even Mueller himself says, nah, then this just builds a case for the administration that, you see, they will go to any lie, any length, et cetera. Number two, you know, Comey was a train wreck with Hillary Clinton. You know, cleared her, then trashed her, which you don't do when you clear somebody, renewed the case right before the election, clearly interfered with an election, clearly. Right. And then right before the election, within an hour or hours, oh, no, it's okay. I mean, so I don't trust him anyway, either way, R or D or independent or whatever. I don't have any faith in him that he wasn't nothing but political. But do I think that there are dots to be connected in business and money and oligarchs and Saudis and on and on and on? Sure. Anybody that has a worldwide business, that can happen. And, you know, he's got his son-in-law and his son-in-law's father running businesses and the kids. Sure. I think, in fact, that's a path that people are going to pursue. But I think they've got to be very careful of the Manchurian candidate, because if that was true and Mueller found out, because Mueller's, you know, he's been in the FBI, and he found out that was true, Rick, he would have had to have, in the interest of the United States, acted upon that months ago. I mean, literally acted upon it, you know.
No, absolutely. And, you know, but here's the thing. I remember back during the Obama years, I had friends saying that Obama was the Manchurian candidate.
Well, no, he was the candidate from Mecca. He was the plant from the Arab world.
No, that as well. But you know, I'm looking at the Las Vegas Review Journal. It's saying, is Obama the Manchurian candidate? I mean, there were stories out there the same thing.
Sure.
You know, he was born and bred to be president, and you know, because
right.
he's going to bring down, he's going to make this a socialist America. So you know that cuts both ways. And look, I'm with you. I have very little trust in the FBI, the NSA, the CIA. All of this makes me very uncomfortable that I have to defend those organizations, which have done some pretty crummy things over the years.
Well, you know, Rick, when I got in trouble, and there's stories out there on the net somewhere, I'll have to surf it. I haven't for years. You know, one day the Los Angeles Times called and the phone rang, and they wanted to know if that they had credible sources that the Shah of Iran's daughter bought me a boat.
Wow, what kind of boat was it?
It was a real nice one. It was a 60-foot long boat that I could never actually drive, and I did have a boat, and it was in the you know, if she'd have bought me a boat, it would have been a lot nicer than this one. But I did have a boat, and it was docked in D.C., and I got it, you know, instead of an apartment, and you can take a tax, you know, break off of it, et cetera. So I had pointed out to the newspaper that the Shah of Iran's daughter died, and she died of the youngest. Her name was Laila Pahlavi, and she was the youngest daughter. She died in 2001. This inquiry was made in 2000. She died in 2001 of a drug overdose in Paris, right?
Right.
And I pointed that out. Unless she came back from the dead, it was very difficult for her to have bought me that boat. So I'm racking my brain. Where does this come from? So I talked to my lawyers. Well, I had bought the boat off of an Iranian-American whose family was of the lineage of the old Qajar dynasty, which was the kings and queens of Iran centuries ago, okay? And she happened to be of that lineage, and she was an American, Iranian-American. And my lawyers called the Justice Department and said, because they had worked there, and said, oh, by the way, she's an FBI agent. He bought the boat off of one of your FBI agents.
So let me ask you, because my mind immediately goes, is this a setup? I mean, is this them trying to stab you in the back?
Well, what happened was somebody within the FBI got pieces of information, ran with it, leaked it. It got to the Los Angeles Times. It was a very sexy story, you know, spicy.
Yeah.
Shah of Iran's daughter buys a congressman a boat, and that's how it started. And I mean, I can't make this up. Now, they ran the story anyway, saying that it really wasn't a story, but they ran it.
We have a story, but it isn't really a story.
Right. Yeah. And it gave no credibility to them pursuing me. Of course, you know, I eventually did a plea, but if I'd have been fighting this in court, I'd have used that. But they went to that extent. It was the Justice Department that did it.
Yeah.
The FBI.
See, but
I'm saying, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is where we're in a very weird world, because this is Trump's Justice Department. You know.
Yes, I know.
Is really a very strange kind of situation, because you know it's his people kind of doing this. And look, I understand as I've been reading these stories and I've been hearing, you know, people talk about it. You know, there were conversations all around. There were also conversations that, you know, he's completely innocent as the, you know, the driven snow, which I don't buy either. So the extremes, I'm not buying. I'm somewhere, you know, in the middle of the road going, you know, here's a guy who's got international business ties. He's elbow to elbow with these Russian oligarchs. The moneyed interest is paramount. And those are the decisions that are being made. Those are the priorities that they're going to push. Not so much of average, everyday working Americans, because I don't buy his populist rhetoric, but that of the wealth class, of the global wealth class of which he claims to disdain. You know, here he is doing some of their stuff. That I do buy.
Well, I think, you know, like business wise, Rick, and the business connections. You know, they can. I mean, there's a report has been written on it. In fact, the president's son. Have you ever looked at the statements that his son or both of his sons made on the business end of things?
Yeah, which one, Junior or the idiot one?
Junior, I guess it was. Junior. And the thing that they said was directly, it was about the Deutsche Bank. Now, they said that Russians make up, this is a quote, Russians make up a pretty disproportionate cross-section of a lot of our assets, Donald Trump Jr. in 2008.
Right.
We don't rely on American banks. We have all the funding we need out of Russia, boasted Eric Trump in 2014. Okay, that I'm just directly quoting. I'm not making this up. So, you know, and if you look at 86 all cash purposes from 2003, all these purchases to 2017, it's on Trump properties in by Russians totaling $109 million. And in 2010, the private wealth division of the Deutsche Bank loaned him hundreds of millions during the same period that the Deutsche Bank was laundering Russian money. I'm just quoting. That's fact. Those are facts that I just.
Those
quoted.
Are facts. No, I mean there's no disputing that. And to me,
right.
that's the part of this that's important. You know, the
exactly.
P tapes and some of the other more salacious stuff. I don't really get all involved in it. It's follow the money. It goes back to the, you know, very simple. It's the kleptocracy, stupid. And I just believe that, you know, all of that. Yeah, I mean, the Russian money was in on it, and I also want an investigation into the NRA laundering Russian money as well. I mean, there's so much of this that plays. And look, you know, the Russian money was on the left, too. I mean, there are a number of programs that are funded by, you know, Sputnik or RT mm-hmm. or all of those things. We've really got to look at, you know, exactly, you know, who we're allowing to do what in this country at some point. Or am I just being paranoid on that?
No, so I think there are things that, you know, can be looked at. Now, does that mean that Putin said, I want you to do this and do that for this and that? No, doesn't mean it. But it does mean there's dots or connections or something that is worth looking at.
Yep.
So I think they've got to be very careful which direction that they look.
Absolutely. And look, you know, as I said from the day one almost, I believe that Junior and Idiot, Idiot son and Kushner and the rest of them were extraordinarily overambitious and entitled and willing to break whatever rule they could possibly break to get ahead, because that's what business is. And they looked at this as a business venture and not as a campaign that they had to follow laws. So did they break a bunch of campaign laws? I'll bet you, yeah, absolutely. The fact that they took the meeting with that Russian lawyer just shows how arrogant idiotic they were. And looking for dirt. So for me, yeah, there's a lot there.
Well, I mean, this is like, you know, for example, the Clinton Foundation and Hillary was Secretary of State. Eventually, if you do that, you're going to beg for problems. It's just natural. You're going to beg for problems, okay?
Yep.
Well, it's the same thing with President Trump in the White House. He can have his Trump business, but you can't have the people running the business, which happens to be the kids and the son-in-law, in the White House.
Yeah.
It doesn't. You're begging again for trouble, because who picks up the phone to Mohammed bin Salman is Jared Kushner. Who's advising the president that this is all nonsense about Khashoggi being chopped into 15 pieces? Jared Kushner. You know, that's an easy dot to connect.
Yeah. No. And
what happens to Kushner later on? Does he get I don't know if he does. Does he get a benefit for doing these things later when he leaves the White House? I don't know. Maybe.
We'll see. We'll see how that plays out. But at the end of it, I still believe, you know, Trump is his own worst enemy, because he just can't keep his mouth shut. I mean, you know, my grandfather always said, you have the right to remain silent. Use it. And this is one of those things where he just can't shut up. He can't get out of his own way.
Well, someone told me today on one of the radio shows, they said, he actually tries to make himself look like the Manchurian candidate. because he just talks too much.
Well, let me ask you that on the other side of this, because isn't part of the, you know, the game plan, couldn't part of the game plan to make it look so ludicrous that, oh, they're calling him the Manchurian candidate now, and you throw up your hands and go, this is all just, as he's saying, a big hoax, to where when the real report comes out and real crimes of, you know, campaign violations and having meetings with Russian agents in the Seychelles and in Trump Tower and, you know, go down the list of, you know, people who went over to Russia, you know, doing who knows what. When that really comes out and you document that, then people may look at that as well and go, well, that's all a hoax, too.
I mean, there's so many twists and turns, yeah. And I think, you know, this thing's went on such a long time, I think they have to, you know, begin to wrap some things up. Now, there's different paths that they're taking now. Elijah Cummings is having Cohen come in to his committee, the government reform.
And again, stupid on that.
Cohen's... I can't imagine if you're going to be sentenced that you're going to go before a committee.
Just dumb.
I don't get it.
I'm going to watch it, but I still think it's really
Oh, yeah, I'm
going to
watch it. It's my job.
just dumb. No, I think this is going to be entertaining because I want to see the Republicans attack him and try and trip him up and try and perjure himself, because ultimately he's going to be sentenced for one thing. If he perjures himself, you know they're going to push for perjury charges. So it'll be fun to watch.
Sure. Absolutely.
There should be a perjury drinking game or something. I got to find somebody who's going to make up a good drinking game to go along with it. Let's move along. Turkey. Evidently, Trump has threatened to, quote unquote, devastate Turkey economically if they hit the Kurds. Are we buying any of that?
Well, this is coming from a couple of areas. And my favorite punching bag, John Bolton, National Security Advisor. Number one, Trump, all of a sudden, the president announces this shocking, you know, news, we're going to leave Syria. I mean, and the generals are saying, oh, we are. And John Bolton is saying, oh, we are. And so is the Secretary of State. Then Bolton, a week ago, makes a statement. He's going to go to Turkey, meet with the president of Turkey. And not all the troops are leaving. Some are staying until Turkey agrees not to go after the Kurds, who have been our friends, the Kurds. And the president of Turkey says, no, I'm not meeting with you, and you've made a stupid decision. So it turns around, the president still is withdrawing troops, which makes Bolton look, you know, ridiculous, because Bolton is saying we're not going to withdraw all the troops. So I think this is the president's way of withdrawing the troops but still saying, okay, you know, we're not keeping troops, but if you do anything against the Kurds, we are going to, you know, devastate you economically. So I think this is the, you know, the little salvation for, I think Bolton must have organized this once Bolton realized he wasn't going to get the troops to begin to stay, you know, in Syria.
Yeah, and it's pretty hard to make Bolton look any sillier than he looks with that giant chia pet on his lip. But
you look, actually, Trump originally didn't hire him because of that mustache. But look at, and that's true, but... look at what Bolton just did.
Hold on, stop, wait.
No, that's true.
I know, but stop and think about how childish and petulant and ridiculous that's
true.
I'm not going to hire you because, not that you...
I used to put Bolton's picture on a refrigerator and tell my kids, I actually did do this. This is your babysitter if you misbehave. And Trump, actually, President Trump, I know for a fact, actually made statements he didn't want him around because the mustache was so hideous. This is when Bolton was trying for another job. Yeah, true. So, but Bolton, three mortars, not ballistic missiles, three mortar were launched by somebody from Iran, who knows, into Iraq, and they hit an empty parking lot, and Bolton tried to put together a war plan against Iran. He did.
Well, you do know that is his wet dream list right there.
Yeah, well, that's it. Iran, he wakes up at night screaming Iran, you know.
I'm going to leave that. I'm not going to go any deeper into that.
Alrighty.
Because that only gets me in trouble.
I know where you're going.
And finally, let's wrap this up. 2020 is around the corner. It's going to be fun. I mean, we're going to start seeing a bunch of Kamala Harris is going to announce soon. You've got Julian Castro going to announce. You've got, you know, Elizabeth Warren. You got a whole bunch. Eventually, there's going to be a field of like 100. I saw, you know, one of the gun crazy groups is, you know, out against Mike Bloomberg. The idea is coming out. The Green New Deal to me is not a bad idea. What's going on?
Well, now the Green Deal is fascinating because actually the Green New Deal is something that will appeal to Texas. I know we were thinking of oil and things, but as things move, you know, in just different directions, the Green New Deal will focus on non-fossil fuels. Now, you know, I'm from Belmont County in the heart of coal country, but even some of the coal owners and the people that were working in different coal mines have started to recognize that, you know, possibly the solar and other types of energy can be brought to different states.
Right.
And then some of the jobs brought there. So that's what they're going to be promoting, the Green New Deal. I think it's important how they promote it, that they need to promote not just on, hey, this is environmentally cool, but they need to show the job
the
end.
The jobs.
Yeah, the jobs end. If they do that, then it's just not going to be deemed a, quote, crazy lefty Greenpeace deal. It's going to be something very legitimate.
Yeah, well, I kind of go back to the 2016 campaign. Hillary tried that. We're going to replace, you know, those coal jobs with, you know, people making solar panels, and we're going to do job training to do that stuff. All we heard was she doesn't care about coal.
Yeah, she kind of said it wrong.
She did. You know, she needs a good messaging guru like you. But,
right.
You know, I guess it's how you say it, but it was kind of the same thing. Coal
sure.
is dying. You know, there's you know, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and someday, you know, down the road, if we want to sustain the planet, we can't have 900 million more cars.
And it would be nice to have really good public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to own a car? No. I got three of them because I got to get around.
Exactly.
The wife needs to get places, and we need... Would I love to be able to hop on a bus or a train and get to work? Absolutely. When I lived in Cleveland,
right.
I used to do it all the time. Nothing like that in central Pennsylvania. I'd love to go to Washington, D.C. or to Philly or Pittsburgh and take a train. There's no way that happens now.
Mm-hmm.
That's simple. Anyway, Bob, I appreciate it, man. Good stuff.
Okay. Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney, Talk Media News. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
For and by We the Working People. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Going to this battle, take my union gun. Gonna end this world of slavery before this war is won. You're bound to lose. Are you fascist?
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. So Giant Foods, they have announced that they're going to have robotic assistants inside 172 of their supermarkets. And how they're describing it as a big cartoonish, big slow, tall, some slow-moving giant gray thing with big cartoonish eyes. This big AI machine, this big, understand what it is. They're selling it as a way to, well, make sure that when there's a spill on aisle six, it's detected quicker. That it's going to help you, like I'm trying to find the mustard or whatever because I never buy it. It's going to tell you where that is. It's going to report debris, potential hazards. You know, to make sure that we're going to improve your shopping experience. And my first thought is, no, the reason that they're doing it is, well, we're going to keep an eye on you. There'll be eyes everywhere. And get ready for it. It's going to happen. But Ahold Delhaize USA, which is the parent company of Giant Food Stores, they plan on deploying about 500 robots to stores under the brand name of Giant, Martin's, and Stop and Shops. They will arrive in waves over the coming months. So expect to see one of those very, very soon. Yay! So much fun. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you missed any of the program, therickssmithshow.com. Be back here tomorrow. Thanks so much. See you then.
It's coming from the wind.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at therickssmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at therickssmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tidal flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious.